Drop a line and catch some fresh fish. It's more of Go Fish with Mike Buck. Brought to you by POP Fishing and Marine at Pier 38 in Honolulu's Fishing Village. Right here on AM 690 KHNR.
Okay, so the last time you went fishing on a boat, you passed by this thing and somebody said, oh, that's a fad. What do you mean it's a fad? It's a cool thing to do? Nope. That's a different kind of fad. This is a fad. For short, it's fish aggregation device. And boy, are you set to learn some? You know, every time I think I know a lot, I take a look at some of the stuff coming out of the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. I say, blow me away again. As you know, the program is being brought to you by Pier 38's Fishing Village. And that is POP Fishing Marine and NECO's Life Raft and Marine Safety. You know what we're talking about. And also partially brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. And we're from time to time very fortunate to have some of the movers and shakers and players in the studio returning. Wearing his hat as International Fisheries Development and NEPA Coordinator is Eric Kingma. We're not going to necessarily talk about too much of that today, Eric, but basically speaking, it's like all of you guys at the council are jack of all trades. No matter what, if something's got to be done, you get the short straw, you got to go do it.
That's right. We cover a range of issues.
Yeah. Now, you know, this whole thing about fads, I'm guessing has been around as long as recorded time. Men have tried to figure out, how do I make something attractive so a fish can stop so I can catch it? What's the concept of the fad?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's an aggregation device, but here in Hawaii, you know, koa have been, you know, known for centuries, yeah. Native Hawaiians, and that's essentially it's the same thing. It's a place where you keep going back to and fish are aggregated there. So in sort of modern times, there's essentially two types of fads. There's a drifting fad, so that's not anchored, and then there's anchored fads, which are anchored to the seafloor with various types of either cement blocks or some sort of sand anchors.
How in the Hawaiian chain, in our state fads, some of them are in much deeper water than others. How deep a water can you put a fad in?
I think it.
How much rope you got? I guess
it depends on your budget and how much rope you have access to. So, the state of Hawaii has a fad program. They've had a fad program for nearly, I think, three decades now, and that funding source is a federal funding source, and it's actually derived from fishermen expenditures. So there's a tax on tackle and fishing gear and stuff like that that goes to the federal government, and that money actually comes back to the state of Hawaii in the form of the Sports Fish Restoration Program.
Okay.
And, not wanting to speak for the state of Hawaii, but, it's been a well-run program. They've been putting out fads for decades. There's about 55 fads, state-operated fads.
Aren't there, Eric, an awful lot of concerns about their ability to not only get deployed but stay deployed? I mean, Mama Nature is pretty rough on these things, right? Sometimes they break loose all the time.
Yeah, that's the number one factor with fad deployments is their longevity and their sustainability. So you can put a fad out in anywhere from, 500 fathoms to 2,000 fathoms, basically sort of the range. Most of the state of Hawaii fads are within 1,000 fathoms, within
6,000 feet of something holding
it
down.
So it's usually that's in Hawaii waters. That's about between 10 and 15 miles. Some of them are about within 3 miles. Even with short.
You know what? I got to tell you, back in the day when they first put them out, you had to have some pretty good landmarks. I mean, they were pretty hard to find. Once you could get into the general area, I would imagine that it became so much more easy to fish after GPS has got developed and came out, and then all of a sudden you had coordinates. But a fad always isn't where you think it is. I mean, explain a little bit how that scope is, and it can be found anywhere within a pretty big circle.
Yeah, so typically when you deploy a fad, you need about a third more rope of what your depth is.
Okay.
So that extra third amount of rope gives you that a swing or a scope. Mm. And the swing is typically about a mile, or depending how much rope you got, it could be up to 3 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So, with anchored fads, there's a lot of different designs. The state of Hawaii has been utilizing a sort of spar type buoy, a round cylindrical, big yellow ball for a number of years. But early on in the program, they used different designs. They even had submerged fads back in the early 80s.
Yeah, you really had to know where those were to find them.
But they were effective, very effective.
Yeah. What's the secret? I mean, first of all, it's not just a buoy. Uh, what, Most of them, I remember back in the day when they first put them out, the one that I used to go to off Makapu all the time, Tibui, I had these big long strands of polypropylene line and all kinds of stuff to create a food chain.
Right. So the state of Hawaii went away from that,
and
that's been one of the main, actually, sort of concerns or recommendations from fishermen is that they would like to see the state go back to that design.
Right, because it seemed they were very efficient.
To get streamers is, there's just a lot of belief from fishermen that the more structure you have underwater, the sort of larger your FAD footprint is. So you accumulate and aggregate more fish. You develop a little mini ecosystem much faster and larger than, say, just the chain and rope.
Well, what about the concept that some people say, well, FADs are like hotels. You know, a pelagic game fish is swimming around and it sort of sees this or smells this or figures it out, and they go and eat and then they move on. But what about the FADs themselves? Do they sometimes have a resident population?
To the extent that, you know, these pelagic species are resident in the area, they probably do have some sort of residency, depending on species. But also, there's pretty good evidence from tagging studies that, you know, big eye, yellowfin, they don't stick around one FAD for more than 30 days.
You know, one thing that I think was always magic about them back in the day is that you could, if you got there first, you're probably going to catch a fish. I mean, you know, you go by there and it's just a matter of, boom, something going off. Usually a mai mai or an ono, there's something that's around that. But from what I understand, we have no idea in Hawaii how big this whole FAD thing is. You were explaining to me off the air about the huge number of FADs that are deployed commercially and non-commercially. I would think that there's so many of them out there, you can explain a little bit about it, that there are navigation hazards, that there are problems out there with them.
That's right. So so we have 55 anchored state of Hawaii FADs. There's six FADs or so that we've been working on community projects with fishermen farther out offshore than the state of Hawaii FADs. So there's also in Hawaii, there's been a private FAD sort of fishery where fishermen have taken on themselves to put out their own FADs. And those are not legally established. And those do pose some hazards because they're not charted, whereas ours and the state of Hawaii's are definitely charted. But you take a broader look at the Western Central Pacific, for example. So we've talked before, you and I, about the purse seine fishery, and that purse seine fishery is targeting skipjack and yellowfin for canned tuna markets. It's the world's largest tuna fishery.
A lot of boats.
You know, over 2 million metric tons of tuna is harvested in this area annually. And 300 purse seine vessels now operate in the Western Central Pacific. Each vessel is deploying between 100 and 500 FADs annually. So you're looking at 30,000 to 80,000 drifting FADs deployed on an annual basis in the Western Central. That's just the drifting FADs.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is just the drifting ones. Now, typically, are these large?
Yeah, I mean, they're large in the sense that they're probably, you know, 10 to 15 feet long on the surface, maybe 4 or 5 feet wide. But then they have an extensive network of netting that goes below.
Underneath it, that is dragging around.
They add a couple hundred feet of netting and webbing. So that adds the structure.
It seems to me, though, that one of these purse seiners must need a lot of them because you can only get so much fish collected on one, and you know, you can't keep banging it the same day. I mean, you catch them and then you got to go somewhere else.
Yeah, the scary thing is now that all of the drifting FADs are pretty much instrumented, so they're either instrumented with GPS transmission transceivers, and then now most of them have sonar equipment too, so echo sounders on there. So a purse seiner, even an office that owns several purse seiners in who knows where, in Spain, Seattle, in China, they can dial up a screen that has, say, 40 FADs, and they can see biomass under those FADs.
That's
truly
amazing.
And direct their vessels
to go to the biomass. But what about this? What sort of problems are there on the high seas with who uses the FADs? In other words, I'm a company, I got 100 FADs, but somebody else is fishing on them.
Well, this is sort of the unwritten standard with the purse seine fishery. It's very common knowledge. Common practice, if I'm a purse seiner and I come across someone's FAD,
I'm going to fish.
And I see fish there.
Yeah.
I'm going to fish it.
Sure.
And I might just cut that guy's GPS and take the FAD.
Wow.
And send his GPS off.
Wild
so
West.
That is Wild West cowboy stuff that goes on in this international fishery that doesn't get talked a lot about, but it is very common. Internationally, there are some movements to regulate and document and track all these fads, but there's, you know, industry's been very sort of hesitant to that. It's still several years away from getting a handle on the large purse seine fad fad fishery. And just to make another point about the fad fishery is that it's not necessarily a clean fishery. So when you have
fads, what do you mean by that?
When you have fads, it accumulates not only your target species, skipjack and yellowfin. And fads generally tend to accumulate smaller fish too. So juvenile yellowfin, juvenile big eye accumulate on fads. And when they're caught by purse seiners that are not targeting those species but targeting skipjack, you get a high percentage of juvenile bycatch of yellowfin and big eye.
And now what you're doing is these fish are now being prevented to grow.
That's right.
And to reproduce.
So you're decreasing the whole yield out of the stock.
Yeah.
You're contributing to overfishing, and now we have a problem with big eye. So our Hawaii longline fishery is targeting big eye, adult big eye, but they're being caught, you know, a few thousand miles away when they're about 3 or 4 pounds by purse seiners who have no intention to, they don't want them at all. It's incidental. They don't even want to put them in a can, but they're forced to because there's a non-retention.
Now, one thing that one would have to ask, when we talk about a purse seiner, we're talking about a boat that has this big bag net behind it, and it goes through the water and picks up the net and dumps everything out on the deck of the boat. And then they separate it. Do these die? Do these little baby yellowfin and big eye die?
Yeah, they're pretty much crushed. Every time you purse up, you know, 150 tons of tunas and bring them on board, everything's dead. And, you know, one vessel, a trip, you know, the capacity for one of these large vessels is 1,000 metric tons.
Yeah, see, nobody here really has that concept. Yeah. I mean, you think you have a big fish box or big ikima. You don't. I mean, these things are unbelievable.
Yeah, so a longliner, say a Hawaii longliner coming back, typically brings back, you know, 10 tons.
Yeah,
about 20,000.
20,000. That's a big load, by the way.
That's a big load. These guys are, you know, catching, what, 10 times that amount?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, it also 100
times
is
that amount.
This what we have here, and we go and we really underline and highlight this every chance we get. We've got a true fresh fishery. And, you know, the great majority of the fish that is caught here by the longline fleet and by the local trolling fleet, it's all fresh. And what you're talking about, these purse seiners, they don't care about fresh, they care about tonnage.
Yeah, it's all frozen, and it's all, you know, either destined, you know, for cannery markets that are canned either in Thailand and American Samoa, Ecuador, Fiji, you know, out of the Pacific.
Is there anything, do you think, Eric, to evidence or to think about how many fads are being deployed just outside of Hawaii's waters and international waters that are maybe hurting our chances more inshore?
Yeah, so there's one figure that we recently saw was about 80,000 of these drifting fads by the purse seine fishery. And then there's thousands upon thousands of anchored fads in Papua New Guinea, Solomon Islands. There's also anchored fads on the high seas in the Western Pacific. There's these high seas pockets, as they're called, sort of between Palau and FSM. Those areas are also subject to high seas fishing, predominantly by the Philippines purse seine fleet. They actually anchor fads and little houses on them.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, you told me about this off the air. We got to make sure that people understand. These are not just little things drifting around. People are living on them sometimes.
Yeah, they're sort of kind of one-room shacks.
Yeah, yeah.
That people are living on to protect those fish.
That, so by the way, that's the job that the new guy gets, right? Yeah. We'll see in a couple of weeks or whatever it is.
So I think it's basically to deter other
poachers
from fishing on them. Yeah, and this is on the high seas. You know?
Yeah. So, but what we need to do is we need to really make you understand what's happening here locally. You mentioned that there are some private fads, and that even though they are probably, hopefully, being looked after by their owners, they cause problems, and they're not. You're not supposed to do that. They're illegal.
Yeah. So, basically, the private fad fishery that we call it, I think we started in maybe the '90s, early '90s, and you know, people saw how successful the state of Hawaii fads were. They're able to aggregate fish, but so fishermen took it on their own will to put out some fads, and it is illegal in the sense that they're not registered with the U.S. Coast Guard and not permitted by the Army Corps of Engineers. There's sort of hot spots for private fads around the state. So the council has, you know, fishermen, the state of Hawaii council, we've all known about this. The Coast Guard knows about it. Enforcing it is difficult. You know, they're not They're not going out searching for these things, although there has been a few dedicated patrols for, for searching.
I can tell you one thing that I learned this from a friend of mine. Everybody loves technology and loves a GPS system and loves you know, the radar and loves autopilots. There's certain things in parts of the Pacific that you just wouldn't want to be sleeping on autopilot because there's just too much stuff out there.
Yeah, that's right. And so recognizing the management issue, the sort of navigational issues, you know, the council wanted to address the issue of the private FADs. So we looked into designating FADs as fishing gear, requiring marking of FADs and all that stuff. So we sort of stopped short of that in the early 2000s. And then we began working with communities, with fishing communities, to develop non-state of Hawaii FADs, but legally permitted FADs that are sort of supplement the state of Hawaii's program, but a little bit farther offshore to maybe address some of the commercial guys, space out some of the fleets the smaller guys can access.
What sort of mandate would you be under for one of those with regards to marking them and charting them?
Yeah, so the mandate, the regulations are you have to have a U.S. Coast Guard permit.
Okay.
And in that permit, you identify the location and the design, and then you have to have a light that it's visible probably from at least 3 miles away.
So there are some pretty stiff requirements.
You know, the location that is selected is evaluated by the Coast Guard, the Army Corps, for environmental impacts and that type of thing. And if you get an approval, that's great. Based on our work with communities, there was a Hana fisherman that sort of replicated what we did. We worked with him initially, and he was also the sort of the first legally established you know, non-state of Hawaii, non-council FAD guy. So he's a private fisherman who got a legally established FAD.
The thing that comes to mind sometimes, Eric, and if you're just joining us, Eric King was with the council, and we're talking about FADs, and hopefully you're going to learn a little something here. The FADs that we have around Hawaii, I know there's a lot of complaints by fishermen that maybe have a hard time understanding what happens when they break loose and when they try to get redeployed. There's a lot of people and there's not a lot of budget. I mean, we're very, very lucky that we have any of them. But at any given time, any number of these may not be where they're supposed to be.
That's right. So the state of Hawaii's had a little bit of issue with their funding source, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. As many fishermen know, there's about 30 state FADs now that are missing, and they haven't been able to redeploy.
It's like half are missing.
And, you know, I know the state is working with the Fish and Wildlife Service on it. I'm getting calls from concerned fishermen, like, what can we do to get these buoys out? And right now it's basically a waiting game. I think it will happen. It's just a matter of time. So when they are lost, they do drift off. The one thing with our buoys, our community FAD projects, is that we've and we had the budget to do it, and we're a much smaller sort of project. Mm-hmm. We only had a few, as opposed to 50. But we're able to put GPS beacons on our buoys.
Gotcha.
So if they do become detached, we're able to
find them
and track them down.
But what about the responsibility that a fisherman has? I know, way back in the day, one day I was out in, once again, off Kaneohe or on the windward side, and it was one of the buoys out there, and I couldn't believe it because when I got to it, somebody was tied up to it, and they were fishing off the back of it. I guess they were jigging for tombo or something. There are rules and regulations. I mean, you know, these things are not motels. You can't go sleep on them.
That's right, and you're not supposed to tie up to it because this adds that much more pressure on the connections, and these things, they don't last forever.
Yep.
The average longevity of a, you know, well-designed FAD is maybe 2 years.
Yeah, it's amazing. Know? Are you guys sometimes amazed, or maybe you can give us some anecdotal stuff, on actually where they can go? Because I know that there was one time a Molokai buoy ended up off Waianae. I mean, you know, they do some serious traveling once they break loose.
Well, I think one of the state of Hawaii buoys ended up off Guam.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? It really is.
So that's a few thousand miles away, and they can drift out there. And that's probably one of the things that, you know, the Fish and Wildlife Service is looking at. So maybe there might be some changes there, but it's going to come at some cost. You know, those GPS beacons are about $1,000 to $1,500 a piece, and then you have to pay for the satellite transmission cost at a monthly cost.
And by the way, just deploying them and bringing them back and maintaining them is a pretty daunting task.
So, you know, the state of Hawaii should be commended, acknowledged. It's a difficult job to continue to deploy and operate a FAD program. It's hard for communities to do their own thing, continue to put out FADs. It costs money. But, you know, now fads are, they're here to stay. You'll find very, very difficult if you go into a community and no one wants a fad there. It just provides opportunity for fishing that, you know, sometimes it saves fuel. You can go to a location and it's a better opportunity to catch fish. Sometimes it provides a better, you know, safety at sea consideration mm-hmm. as well.
You know, I think that as we learn a little bit more about them, that they become ever so valuable, because I actually know people that don't like trolling because, you know, that you're miles and miles. So they'll go like a homing pigeon to a fad, mm-hmm. and then they'll try baiting or they'll try doing mm-hmm. things in fad. So these things have actually been contributory, and I know that you've been keeping as good a record as you can as to what they're producing. I think people would be interested to know how that information is collated, yeah. and what it means to the future of getting more of them deployed.
Yeah, so part of our projects working with fishing communities and fishermen in our small little community projects was that we wanted to get voluntary catch information, and we asked fishermen to submit their catch logs to us. We changed the form a little bit from the regular CML reporting form,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't have size class information. So the regular CML is basically the number of pieces and species. Our form and logbook had the size class. So we want to know what size of the fish.
Sure.
That's important because it is known, and the data we did get back is that on average, you're catching smaller fish than, say, if you're out trolling and you get mm-hmm. some big blind hits or something like that. So in general, there's smaller fish that they're generally attracted to the fads. But then you have some seasons or time of the year where you get some big mamas out there and you get some big fish on fads.
I got to tell you, what I find really interesting back in the day is that we would have pretty good reporting going on for dead whale carcasses and logs and things that were floating around. And I'm just wondering if there's been anything to substantiate it yet, but one would assume that with all of the debris in the water from the tsunami off Fukushima province in Japan, that there's an awful lot of, quote, fads out there or fish aggregating devices just because of the tons of stuff that's out there.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the whole purse seine fishery on fads started on logs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, anytime you come across something drifting in the ocean, there's likely fish under it. So for some reason, fish associate to floating objects.
I'm not sure what it is, but I can tell you that one time, many, many years ago, I saw something and we went over towards it, and it was some glass balls, and it was three or four of them. They were all tied together.
Yeah.
And so we went by it, and when we went by it, I was going to say, well, we got to take in the lines and turn around and go get that. Then two lines went off.
Yeah.
So what happens is anything floating out there is likely to have a fish on it.
Yeah. And, you know, there's different sort of scientific explanations for it, but mostly it's, you know, for coverage, for refuge, but also, you know, for feeding as well.
Yeah, because little things hang out under the shade of it, and then big things come and eat them.
Mm-hmm.
What about the future of them? I mean, I do know that you're doing these exhaustive studies on different sizes and different things. I'm amazed. Some of them nowadays, they look like little boats out there anchored, you know, because they used to be a big thing, I guess, which would cause a lot of drag, and now they're more aerodynamic.
Right. So, you know, fishermen and others are getting more sort of akamai to the different designs, and there's a lot of different designs out there. There's some that are, there's these called Indian Ocean designs that are basically a string of floats
mm-hmm.
that are at the surface, and they're designed to actually submerge when there's high wave events or, you know, currents.
Wow. Yeah.
And,
it's high tech.
You know, they're being used in French Polynesia and the Indian Ocean, and they have a much longer longevity
mm-hmm.
Than, say, the State of Hawaii, the big spar buoys. But do they pose maybe a more navigation risk because they're not not a big light on them or something? So there's those trade-offs. And the State of Hawaii has used the same design for decades. I think going forward in the future, it's all about maybe, you know, better designs, more GPS-type information so fishermen know exactly where the fad is at all times, helps in recovery. We had a workshop 2 years ago that invited a lot of, you know, fishermen in Hawaii and also from the territories and the folks that run the territory program. So an American Samoa, Guam, and Commonwealth of Northern Mariana Islands. They're all very similar, but we had several recommendations out of that workshop, and most of it is related to R&D, but more community input. Fishermen input on locations of where the fads are.
I can tell you one thing, Eric. These things have become more and more supplemental to everybody's catch than ever before. It's because I guess we went through the last couple of years of very high fuel costs, and trolling became, you know, when you're burning 6, 8, 10 gallons an hour, it became out of reach and you couldn't catch as much fish. But still there must be some wants and desires. You guys have been monitoring this for a long time. What would you say the challenges are right now going forward in the rest of 2015 and 2016 with regards to either redeploying some more or making the powers that be realize how important funding is?
Yeah, it's, I think it's the having the community support, you know, having the state of Hawaii being acknowledged for the program they've done, but also fishermen recognizing that it is a difficult job. So going forward, you know, the Fish and Wildlife Service needs to hear from Hawaii fishermen how important it is to continue that program. You know, on the council side, we don't have dedicated funding for, you know, a whole program, but we're continuing to trying to work with fishing communities. So, you know, if we can identify locations that are beyond the state of Hawaii locations or supplements their program, help them acquire permits so they can do things on their own and not have to rely on the state or the feds, that's something that we're interested in. And also then I guess it's just designs. And then lastly, you know, the private fad thing, I think we do need to address, and fishermen need to, you know, if we could help on the state of Hawaii side and the community projects get away from the sort of the cowboy approach.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you can develop a more feasible way to get one of these things, people want to invest, they want to do it. But I think they'd mostly like to do it the right way. I still think, though, that it's sort of interesting because the state of Hawaii has a fish aggregation device program, a website. And this is pretty valuable. You showed me the current one, shows you it was last updated April 27th, so it's pretty, you know, pretty up to date. And it shows what's there and what's not there. Is that a good place to go and see it? I mean, it seems to me that you need your eyes open as to who's home and who's not.
Yeah, that's a great place to go see what fads are deployed and what fads are not. And then also on our website, wpcouncil.org, has some information about the council's community fad projects. I just also want to mention a little bit about, you know, maybe it's not just about fishermen working together, but it's also seafood industry and restaurants. So, for example, Mama's Fish House on Maui, basically utilizing our permitted location, redeployed a community fad working with us and local fishermen. And we renamed it Mama's Fish House.
You know, I got to tell you, if we had more players like them, when you go to Mama's Fish House on Maui, folks, not only do you know the fish of the day, but who caught it.
That's right.
And I mean, it's just fantastic information. Tourists just love that. Yeah. This is a mai mai. It's a dolphin fish caught by Captain So-and-so yesterday.
Right. And, you know, so quite a few fish were harvested off those buoys, and Mama's Fish House weren't the only beneficiaries.
Of course.
A lot of the wholesalers on Maui benefited from that fish too. Mm-hmm. So I think going forward is working, you know, groups coming together, recognizing the benefits, contributing funding, collaborative funding, working with, you know, state, federal partners. You know, there's opportunities there.
Well, listen, I want to tell you how much I appreciate you spending some time with us, Eric. I think that, you know, a lot of us have taken these things for granted for a long time, and now it's important to realize that we got to sort of what they call malama the aina. We got to malama the buoys, right? We got to take care of this stuff. That's going to do it for this week. I want to thank you for listening and remind you, if you want to get more information on this, the state location is hawaii.edu/himb/fads, but it's a lot easier to go to wpcouncil.org and find out for yourself. Thanks for listening. If you got a suggestion for the show, it's pretty easy. Drop me a line, themikebuckshow@aol.com. And we'll be back again next week. Tell everybody about the program. And look, this month's issue of Hawaii Boats and Yachts, the Buck Stops Here column, all about the Fish to Waste program, and also all about the tournaments that are coming up this summer. Have a great day. We'll see you next time here on Go Fish.